Hello and welcome to Filling the Sink, a podcast from Catalan News. My name is Leah Belaeva, and today we're talking about Salvador Dalí. May 11th marks the 120th anniversary since the Catalan artist Salvador Dalí was born. The artist was probably mostly known for his surrealist art and his eccentricity, but there's so much more to discover. So on today's podcast, we dive into the life and art of Salvador Dalí. We will shed light on the multiple layers of this famous Catalan. We will also visit his museum and house in northern Catalonia and talk to art historians. Today, I'm joined by Uriol Escudé. Welcome back, Uriol.
It's great to be here.
Great to have you. So let's start with the basics. The artist that we know as Salvador Dalí actually has a really, really long name. Salvador Domingo Felipe Jacinto Dalí y Domènech. That's a mouthful. Where was Dalí born and who was his family?
Dalí was born on May 11 in 1904 in Figueres. Figueres is a small town in northern Catalonia. But many people say that his life started 2 years before he was born.
Why is that?
Because he had a brother who died 9 months before he was born, and he was named Salvador as well.
Wow, and I imagine that that must have really had an impact on him to be named after his deceased brother, right?
Yeah, indeed. He had a personality crisis throughout his childhood. He thought he was his brother's replica, and he felt he was a replacement or a reincarnation, maybe. But at the same time, many people say as well that his eccentricity comes because of that. So maybe Dalí wouldn't be Dalí if he hadn't had a deceased brother.
I see. And what about his parents? What were they like?
He had a really bad relation with his dad. Salvador Dalí y Cusí, his father, was a strict and authoritarian notary and lawyer. And throughout Dalí's career, he had several disputes with his father. For example, his dad rejected him marrying Gala because Gala was divorced. And he also got very angry when Dalí displayed a Sacred Heart with the inscription, "Sometimes I spit on my mother's portrait for fun." After that, his dad disinherited him and banned him from returning to Cadaqués. And then Dalí sent his dad a condom filled with his semen and said, "Here, I owe you nothing anymore."
Wow, that's really something.
Yeah, it is. His dad actually changed his will 8 times in the last years of his life. So you can tell it was
on and off, good relationship,
exactly.
Bad.
Mm-hmm.
But what about his mother?
Dalí had a great relation with his mom, but she died when he was 16. And Dalí later said that it was the hardest blow of his life because he really adored his mom. His mom was sweet. She supported him.
And in his own biography, he wrote that his mother was the honey of the family.
Yeah, he definitely played a key role in his paintings as well.
Speaking of him as an artist, was he always an artist?
He was a mediocre student, and his father actually had to change him from school several times. But he discovered painting through a Catalan painter, Ramon Pichot, who recommended his dad to enroll him in painting classes. And that's how Dalí started. Then he started doing a little exhibitions in Figueres, another one in Barcelona. He won his first prize. And his dad was very strict, as we said earlier, but he allowed him to paint on the one condition that he would go to Madrid to study fine arts and obtain a teaching degree.
So how did it go in Madrid, Uriol? In the end, did he become a teacher?
No, he didn't.
You have
and
a funny
there's
anecdote,
a fun
right?
story. of why he didn't. This was in the 1920s, Madrid. He was residing at Residencia de Estudiantes, which by then was the main cultural center in Madrid. And he made really great friends, Federico García Lorca and Luis Buñuel, for example.
So meeting all of these different artists that really also helped him shape his own persona, right?
Yeah, exactly. Started dressing eccentrically. And he also started having confrontations with teachers and the institution itself. He got expelled for leading a student protest because he was not granted the chair of painting and he had to repeat the academic year. And then he was permanently expelled from the school for declaring the tribunal that was supposed to examine him incompetent.
Okay, so he didn't trust the teacher's instinct, basically.
He wasn't just a genius, he knew he was a genius.
He knew already he was a genius. But it wasn't only Madrid that really inspired him as an artist. He also started looking towards Paris. And as with many artists, it was a city where he found true inspiration and really also broke through as an artist.
Yeah, so he moved to Paris at the end of the 20s. It was 1926. And there he starts doing exhibitions. He met Picasso, who really influenced him. But he came back to Figueres for a while, so he was going back and forth. And thanks to Joan Miró, the Catalan artist, he gets introduced to this group of surrealist artists led by André Breton. It was at that time, in 1929, that he meets Gala.
And they had an instant connection.
Yeah, and they never separated from that moment.
And the next 10 years, Dalí would concentrate on really consolidating his own style as an artist. And in 1940, during the Second World War, the two of them moved to the United States. And that also kind of shaped Dalí as an artist.
Yeah, he was the artist we know today already, so he was this famous, genius, eccentric character. But in the US, he starts experimenting with other art forms like cinema, set designs, jewelry, illustrations, and writing as well.
And in 1948, they came home to Catalonia, where we have, well, a really big example of him being a multidisciplinary artist.
Yeah, first we have his house, which he did throughout 40 years, maybe, in Portugal. And then we have his museum, which some say it's his last major work because he participated actively in making the museum.
Yeah, and I think we really have to highlight the museum because usually when there's a museum with an artist, it's something that is built after their death.
Yeah.
But Dalí, knowing that he was this great genius, he decided to build a museum while he was alive for people to enjoy after his death.
And they did the same with the house, him and Gala. They knew that that house would be visited by people at some point. So they curated it knowing that that would be a museum as well.
And Uriel, you traveled for 2 hours up north from Barcelona to Figueres and Portugal to visit these two places. So let's hear how that went.
After driving just over 2 hours from Barcelona, I arrived at Portlligat, a small seaside village in a bay at the Cap de Creus, a rocky stretch of land surrounded by the Mediterranean at the foot of the Pyrenees. Portlligat was the least favorite place to work, and he considered it his true home. I was lucky enough to see it on a sunny day with blue skies, but while the landscape is majestic, it's also dark, rough, and a bit disturbing. After a short walk, there it was, the home of Salvador Dalí. The house is located at the end of the bay and consists of a collection of fishermen's huts that the artist acquired over the years. From 1930 to 1982, Portlligat was Dalí's residence, except for a period he spent in the United States after the outbreak of the Civil War until 1948. In 1982, after Gala's death, Dalí moved to the castle of Púbol, and the house in Portlligat was closed. Time stood still for years, and thanks to this, we can now enter Dalí's house in Cadaqués and see it as it was when the surrealist genius lived there. The exterior of the house is completely white, common for the houses in the village, and crowned by iconic giant white eggs, less common in the village, but a motif of Dalí buildings.
Hola, buenas.
As you enter, you are greeted by a life-size taxidermy polar bear. Everything in the house is original, except for the books and the paintings. The interior of the house is a labyrinth, narrow corridors, changing floor levels, the staircases are illogically arranged, and some seem to lead nowhere. In Dalí's words, it's like a true biological structure, a creature as alive as its inhabitants. Every room was carefully created by Salvador and Gala, knowing that one day the house would be open to visitors. One of the most special places in the house is the bedroom, which has 3 levels. On the lowest level, there's a breathtaking view of the sea, and the artist even positioned a mirror in the exact right location so that he could see the sea from the bed. Cap de Creus is the easternmost point of the Iberian Peninsula, so Dalí always said he was the first person to see the sunrise in Spain without even getting out of bed. On the second level of the bedroom, there's a birdcage where Dalí kept birds so that he could hear them singing when he woke up. Even more bizarre, he mounted a tiny cage on the wall and put a cricket inside because he loved to fall asleep to the sound of crickets. And a curious detail, the cricket had to be from Olot, a town in the middle of the Pyrenees, because those crickets were known to sing the best. Other entrancing rooms to see include Gala's dressing room full of photos of Dalí alongside other famous people, or the workshop, the brightest room in the house, left untouched as if Dalí could come back and paint again. Oh, and the phallic pool with the lip-shaped sofa, which made me want to go to one of Dalí's pool parties. I'm sure they must have been a blast. I could go on for hours explaining his house, but I will leave you wanting more. After this fantastic morning, I drove to our next stop, the Dalí Museum in Figueres. The museum is located in the Gala Salvador Dalí Square in Figueres and is one of the 100 most visited museums in the world, and rightly so. It was fully packed when I was there. In his will, the artist left a huge number of his works to the Spanish state, and most of them are displayed here. The museum represents his last major work and the culmination of a total work of art. It was inaugurated in 1974, 15 years before Dalí's death. The artist had a special fondness for the Figueres Municipal Theatre, not only because of his affinity for drama and theatrical works, but also because of a cherished memory. In its lobby, he held his very first exhibition. The exterior of the museum immediately catches the eye. It has a red facade adorned with golden statues, while the roof bears the same giant eggs I saw earlier at his house, all topped off with a striking glass dome. Upon entering, the first thing that grabs my attention is a black Cadillac with an opulent lady perched on the hood. It's the famous installation The Rainy Taxi, a performance first showcased at the International Surrealism Exhibition in 1938. It's a three-dimensional setup created using Gala's Cadillac from their time in the US. Inside the car, two mannequins are seated, the chauffeur in the front seat with a shark's head, and on the back seat, a woman in evening attire. A hydraulic system creates a rain effect inside the car. I also got to see one of Dalí's most famous works, The Christ, exhibited in Spain for the first time since 1952. It's a groundbreaking oil painting depicting the crucifixion against the backdrop of Portlligat. Dalí painted it from the house I had just visited, which made it even more fascinating. But before I could see it, everyone present had a surreal experience. As I entered the room, the museum lights went out, leaving us in the dark. 10 minutes later, the lights came back on, and the Christ appeared, making the experience even more mystical. This was the end of an incredible journey, but Dalí had another surprise for me. As I was leaving the museum, a massive storm broke out, turning a sunny day into a deluge. It was especially surreal considering the ongoing drought in Catalonia. Soaking wet in the car, I couldn't help but think how such storms might have inspired Dalí amidst the beauty of the landscape.
Thank you, Oriol. So I have to confess that I've never been to his house or the museum, but the experience sounds really mesmerizing.
It was fascinating. I had a really nice time, yeah.
I'd like to dive a little bit more into Salvador Dalí as an artist and his motif. Because as you just explained, when you visited Dalí's house in Portlligat, you mentioned landscapes and how the exterior of the house was very typical for the houses in the village. So was Dalí, in fact, inspired by the Catalan landscapes?
Yeah, absolutely. Catalonia has a profound impact on Dalí's paintings. First, the landscape, because surrealism has this thing where we believe that everything's invented, but it's not. It draws inspiration from something. And Dalí took inspiration from Catalan landscapes. He said Cadaqués was the most beautiful place on earth. You know, these rocky coastlines, the sea, the mountain as well. It's all beautiful, but at the same time dark. And Dalí really got a lot of inspiration from that. He was also very connected to Catalan heritage, Catalan culture, like symbols, history, folklore. And as well, you know, he got inspired by different movements and intellectuals and artists. For example, modernism played a
Catalan
key role.
Catalan modernist movement.
Yeah, exactly. You love that movement.
I do. We did a podcast on it a couple of months ago.
And it does have to do a bit with nature, so he drew a lot of inspiration from that.
Yeah, and I think actually if you look at his paintings, if you don't know, they look like they come from a dream. But in fact, if you look closer and you know the Catalan reference, they actually look like the mountains of Cadaqués.
You can actually
see it. And as we have mentioned many times before, many of his motifs, they stem from the Surrealism movement, which celebrates its 100th anniversary this year. But what was surrealism actually?
Well, surrealism started in 1924, 100 years ago, with André Breton's Manifesto. It was a movement that was all about exploring the dreams and the unconscious mind. And the main idea behind surrealism was to mix dreams and reality to create something new that challenges our conception of reality, that provokes thought, emotions.
Yeah, it was kind of like an absolute reality in some sort of
way. Absolutely.
And the idea of interpreting dreams, it was actually something that was somewhat inspired by Austrian psychoanalyst Sigmund Freud.
Yeah, because Freud talked about dreams and the unconscious mind, and Dalí was really into these ideas. And he believed that dreams could show us things about ourselves that we don't even know. And that's what Dalí tried to do with his paintings. He thought a lot about symbols and hidden meanings, just like Freud did. And all these Freudian ideas, Dalí tried to develop them in his method, the paranoiac critical method, which he used in many of his works. And basically, it was a way for him to see things in new and unexpected ways. So he would look at things, at reality, in a paranoid or overly suspicious way. And that would reveal hidden parts of our minds, hidden ideas or thoughts. And with that, he would create the paintings.
I see. And actually, Sigmund Freud and Dalí met at some point. Tell me about that meeting, because it didn't go over that well.
No, Dalí tried to meet him on several occasions. But after a while, it was in 1938 in London when they met. At the time, Freud was 81 and he was this intellectual giant. And Dalí was 34. He was already an established figure, but he was still very young. And the meeting didn't go as Dalí wanted it to go, because for Dalí, Freud was this idol, this iconic figure. He showed him some sketches and he presented him with his paranoia critical method. And Freud made some remarks that didn't sit well with Dalí and he took them as criticism.
Okay, I'm intrigued. What did he say?
Well, Freud said that in classical paintings, he looked for the unconscious, but in Dalí's paintings, he looked for the conscious. So Dalí took that as criticism. And then when Dalí left, Freud said, "I've never seen a more complete example of a Spaniard. What a fanatic."
And what was Dalí's reaction to this Freud comment?
Well, he was definitely angry and disappointed. But thanks to this meeting, we have now a carbon sketch, because Dalí made a portrait of Freud after this meeting. But he didn't draw inspiration from the meeting, but from eating snails. He was at a restaurant eating snails and he noticed a picture of Freud in a newspaper and he thought that his face and snails,
they looked alike.
Resembled, yeah.
And I think also that's very indicative of how Dalí's mind worked in a way, right? That you see snails and then your mind goes directly to Sigmund Freud.
Exactly. The portrait was never shown to Freud, or at least not that we know about.
And another motif that has been up for interpretation are the clocks that also symbolize time. But in which sense, Oriol?
Yeah, as we can see in The Persistence of Memory, probably one of his most famous paintings, time was something very important in Dalí's work.
The painting is these melted clocks in the middle of a desert or in the middle of this mountainous landscape.
He took inspiration in cheese on that one, cheese melting under the sun. That's a good example of his method of working. And the painting symbolizes the collapse of time and space. He messes with us, with reality, with time, with our conception of space.
But it's also virtually impossible to talk about Salvador Dalí as a person and as an artist without talking about his great love, his muse, and his wife, Gala, which we have mentioned before. So let's hear about that.
In the summer of 1929, a group of surrealist artists came to Cadaqués to meet Dalí. Among them was the French poet Paul Éluard and his wife Gala, who immediately amused Dalí and bonded with him. A few weeks later, when it was time to return to Paris, Gala decided to stay. Art historian Mariona Sagurañas explains that that day, their lives changed.
Leaving her husband was a bold step. They had an open relationship, and Éluard initially thought that her relationship with Dalí would be brief and that she would return. But Gala never did, and it was a big blow for Éluard.
The couple soon moved to Portlligat, and she quickly took on the task of boosting his career, not only posing for his paintings, but also stimulating his mind and offering him critics of his works in progress.
I Gala el que fa és la dona que endreça i ordena.
Gala organized everything in Dalí's world so that he could work in peace. For example, Dalí's father and sister took care of his communication with galleries and even negotiated the prices of his paintings. And within 15 days, the management of Dalí's affairs passed from the family's hands to Gala's.
But not only was she his supporter, she was also his muse. She inspired many of his works, in which she appears in various forms, sometimes as a goddess-like figure or as a symbol of femininity and sensuality. Although some considered her a greedy social climber, Gala's personality, style and presence in the art world made her a cultural icon. She embodied the ideals of surrealism and became a symbol of avant-garde culture.
Gala always wanted to be where she wanted to be. She was a free woman.
This was exemplified in the late 1960s when Dalí bought her a castle in the medieval village of Púbol.
Gala was overwhelmed at her home in Portillat because Dalí worked all the time and threw a lot of parties and she needed her space.
Although Dalí decorated the castle in his distinctive style, Gala had a great deal of say in its design. She made the castle her own, transforming it into a reflection of her identity and reaffirming her independence and role as a powerful force in Dalí's life.
Thanks to everyone who spoke with us. Unfortunately, Gala didn't live forever, Oriol.
No, Gala died in 1982, and it had a profound impact on Dalí. He fell into a deep depression and became increasingly reclusive. He moved out from Portlligat, he moved to Gala's castle in Púbol, and he was devastated. And then his health also declined rapidly, and he spent the remaining years of his life in seclusion, and he passed away in 1989 at the age of 84.
All right, so he died in 1989, and he was buried underneath the museum in Figueras. But his story, it didn't quite end there.
Yeah, no, almost 30 years later, in 2017, his remains were exhumed as part of a paternity lawsuit.
Wow, because he didn't have any kids when he was with Gala.
No, he didn't, but a woman named Pilar Abel claimed to be Dalí's biological daughter and sought to prove her paternity through DNA testing. And they extracted samples from Dalí's remains, and the DNA results proved negative.
All right, and one thing that was really interesting, or almost surreal, with this whole exhumation was his mustache.
It was intact when they found it, and his hair was still in this characteristic long style as well, and he was very well preserved. They say it has to do with the embalming process they used when he was originally buried in 1989.
So 120 years have passed of Salvador Dalí's life, and his life and art remains a topic of discussion. One of the things in the later years that has been discussed has been his political affiliation.
Yeah, his political views were complex and controversial. He did express admiration for certain authoritarian figures and made statements supportive of fascist regimes, but as well, his political affiliations were erratic and inconsistent. For example, during the Spanish Civil War, he expressed sympathy for the fascist regime of Franco, but later he distanced himself from politics and claimed he was apolitical. So some historians say that everything he did was to maintain good relations with those in power, to advance in his career, so he was an opportunist in a way. That sometimes led to associations with fascism or controversial figures. But they say that it was always to protect his personal interest.
Well, we'll leave the discussion for academics and scholars. And in the meantime, it's time for the Catalan phrase of the week. What is it this time, Oriol?
Parar de màgia.
Parar de màgia. What does that mean?
It means magically, or, you know, when something unexpected happens, difficult to explain. By magic, you could say, by magic, my phone disappeared.
All right, and that's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening. Please do subscribe to Filling the Sink wherever you get your podcast if you haven't already. Thanks again to everyone for speaking with us. Thanks to you, Oriol.
And you, Lea.
On Monday, we'll already be back again with another episode of Filling the Sink about the Catalan election results, so please stay tuned. On behalf of the team here at Catalan News, I'm Lea Villaiva, wishing you a great weekend. Fins aviat. Adeu.